experience with Tennessee Eastman was very positive. I thought Eastman and or Tennessee Eastman would be a very good alternative. I interviewed them very seriously. with that in mind, I liked 3M. I had their fellowship, and I liked Mallinckrodt. A little different kind of arrangement. I looked at the oil company. Then I came to see DuPont, I really liked what I saw. Somewhere in the course of that interview, people convinced me that my brother and I would not get in each other's way. And that was a very reasonable thing to say, because he was well up in the organization and I was 20 years his junior and working in a totally different part of DuPont. And it didn't take very long for me to perceive that probably didn't make any difference. There were six of us. And particularly with the age disparity, I concluded, well, this is not a problem. I like the Wilmington area, and I like the work. So I changed my mind rather completely in the interview process. I really had not intended to come at DuPont.
Who did you interview with? Who did you talk to?
Well, Ted Cairns must have been one. I talked with several people, I'm sure, but I must say, I don't remember everybody I met on that day. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. I suspect that I know every one of them, and I've just forgotten that they were a part of that particular exercise. But I knew that central research group very well, and still do. At least the ones that were peers, and they were a great group.
Did they tell you during the interview where you would be going or what you would be doing?
Well, I applied at Central. I was being interviewed by Central Research, so that was the target, and that would be the first assignment. But I was pretty candid in that interview. I told them I did not think I would be a career scientist. So I had too much fun doing things that are related to chemistry but are not just chemistry. And the day may come when I want to get off into manufacturing or marketing or something else. And if that's a strike against me, you better know it now, because that's my predisposition. And that did not seem to be a problem. I loved the research 5 years that I did it. Really enjoyed it. But I knew all along that it wasn't going to be forever and I'd do something else.
Was it your Oak Ridge experience that led you to think that way?
Very largely.
Mm-hmm. The work you did in those first 5 years was pretty fundamental chemistry.
Yes.
TCNE work.
Yes. Great fun. TCNE reacts with everything.
You can see that in the papers. There's page after page of new compounds that are listed.
The only thing it didn't do was make money. There are lots of jokes about that. And I told Cairns I never made him any money, but I cost him more than almost anybody else that came along.
Where did the idea come for the TCNE work?
Well, the original thought was that being an analog of tetrafluoroethylene, and there's some similarities between fluoro and cyano groups in some respects that might make a very interesting polymer. It doesn't, at least we never could. We could get gunk out of it and maybe two or three units hooked up some strange way, but we could never make a linear polymer out of TCNE. I don't think anybody else ever has or will. But in the course of working with it, of course, we discovered that it reacted in a Diels-Alder sense with everything that had a diene. It reacted with active aromatic compounds, amines and phenols and things like that in a variety of ways. It made brilliant colors with some of the aromatic materials, and it was just incredibly interesting. And did many, many different things, and did them very quickly and very easily. So it was an organic chemist's dream. So I say the only thing it didn't do was make money.
What were the Well, then, so your interest turned to dyes as opposed to...
Turned to dyes. We saw the molecules were relatively small and substantive to polyester and polyamide. Polyesters were very brilliant. Polyamides were a little bit dull because, I guess, the interaction between the dyes and the polymer chain had some effect in any way. Not chemical, but just physical. But the colors were incredibly sharp and bright. The spectrum was very simple. And the absorption was strong and limited to a short range, so they were very bright colors. And not much trash in the rest of the visible spectrum. So we tried again. You could really produce incredible colors, but they were not wash fast and they were not light fast, and those are two fairly fundamental aspects of dyes. Well, that's pretty much the dye story. None of the other compounds appeared to be particularly attractive for any use that we could think of. So after a while, we finally just decided it was great chemistry, but it probably was not going to pan out.
Wasn't there a patent litigation on that molecule? It seemed to me that TCNE was involved in a patent suit. I may be wrong, but...
If there was, I can't recall it.
Okay.
I don't think the... there could have been some derivative that was involved. I can't remember anything of that sort. Which doesn't mean it didn't happen. I just don't recall it.
Was it about the end of that five-year period when everything died on that... is when you called a halt for the TCNE work?
Well, I think I may have, can't remember whether that was the last thing I worked on or whether I also had another project or two before I left. But at the end of 5 years, I went to the Sulfane Technical Section in Richmond, Virginia, and began working more closely to manufacturing. I worked in that section a couple of years and then went to the plant as technical superintendent, and then for the next 8 years or so, worked in manufacturing, either in a technical or managerial capacity, which I dearly loved. That was fun.
The move to Richmond, was that, did you instigate that move?
Well, I was getting restless, and I don't remember specifically saying it's time to go, but I certainly told my friends that I was interested in getting into an operating department, so-called, and so I suspect they read the handwriting on the wall, this guy is getting restless, and so it happened.
You were in Richmond about 3 years, I think, or no, longer than that.
A little longer than that.
4 or 5 years.
Yes.
And this cement your idea that managing a plant or being in that kind of atmosphere was what you really wanted?
At that time, I thought that was exactly what I wanted. My first goal was to become a plant manager, if that would be possible. And that happened pretty quickly. And then after that, I didn't really... Once you get away from hands-on, it didn't make much difference to me what the function was. I didn't feel very comfortable in marketing. But in research and manufacturing, either one, that was fine.
Mm-hmm. You, of course, were probably interacting with a lot of people who were chemical engineers.
Yes.
You had, as you said, one course in chemical engineering.
Very practical. Yeah, but I've always been a mechanical person. I did my own things around the house, and so that's never bothered me. I'm as comfortable in it as if I knew what I were doing.
Then you went out to Iowa. You were still in cellophane plants out there.
Yeah, very short stint out there, 9 months.
Again, was that Was it somebody else's bidding that you move out there?
Well, it's a practice of DuPont to move people around and give them experience in different environments, different associations. That was very good for me because the Spruance plant was sort of the lead research plant for the cellophane business. The technical section was located there, and a lot of the plant work was experimental. As a consequence, the plant didn't run quite as well as it would have had it just been allowed to settle down and make cellophane, and that began to bother me late in my career there. I guess I should have been happy that I was working in such a research-friendly environment, but I thought we were also supposed to make cellophane and make good cellophane and make a little money. We also had some people in direct line manufacturing that had a technical bent and were inclined to have their own program along with the formal technical program. That bothered me a little bit. So I thought it would be fun to go and work and have an experience in a plant that was regarded as a first-class manufacturing facility, not necessarily a real strong technical organization. So in 9 months, I saw what happens when you really focus on manufacturing and cost, and it was a good part of my training. It was a very different environment, and they're both important, but if you're at some point, you got to settle down and run the plant, and Clinton did that very well.
Then you went to Ohio.
In Mylar.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure that I didn't think it was cellophane.
No, it's Mylar.
Okay.
That plant had just started up and been running a few years, and the process was difficult. Learning curve was very steep, and so the first 2 or 3 years there, we had lots of process problems, we had lots of safety problems, and in the 4 years that I was there, we made a great deal of progress on both. Safety was a real challenge, and we turned that around completely, with considerable agony, but completely. And the process we learned a lot about, and by the time I left, it was fun managing that plant. But when I first got there, it was pretty hectic.
When you say you had safety problems, what, was it attitude problems, or was it?
Yeah, it's always an attitude problem, it was not a fundamental process problem. That is, it wasn't any more hazardous than most of the other plants we run, but for whatever reason, the group hadn't gotten off to a very good start, and people really weren't thinking safety first.
Okay.
And the first few months that I was managing that plant, we had 2 or 3 major injuries, and that is to say, lost time injuries, and although nobody was killed or seriously maimed, that's just unacceptable in the plant. And one of my very good friends from Richmond was then my boss, or at least at a higher level of manufacturing. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, "When your neck gets red enough, that'll stop happening." You know, you could have stabbed me with a knife and hurt me less, but to lay it on the line that I was the guy that had to make the change, it was my fault if we had these problems, did get my attention. And so I talked with small groups. There were 500 or 600 people in the plant, and I talked with groups of 20 or 30 at a time until I'd covered everybody in the plant. And made it very clear that, you know, that was not acceptable, and we were going to stop. And they believed me because it was true. So that was a very difficult experience, but a very important lesson. When the top guy believes in safety, you have a good record. And if he just goes through the motions, that's not enough.
Well, DuPont's always had a in general, a record of being a leader in safety.
Well, that's why I thought I was, you know, I could not believe that I was in any way coming up short on that subject. But the results speak for themselves. Whether it was me or the plant didn't really matter. It was my job to turn it around. And it was a real challenge, and I was pleased. I've been very proud of that group for many, many reasons, but particularly for the change they made in safety. They really stopped having accidents, which is great. They also did a lot of other things very well.
By the time you left, after 4 years, had you worked out the technical problems pretty much?
We've made a lot of progress. As you know, in any process, that's a continuous evolution. And the lines ran well. Still had some quality problems, and I suppose they would say that today. But I no longer had the agony of, when I was playing golf, of seeing black smoke coming from the direction of the plant. So that tells me they weren't burning waste. No, it ran pretty well.
At this particular point, were you thinking more about changing your direction within the company? You said at one point you thought once you got to manufacturing that was going to be it.
Well, I don't think anybody knows where the ceiling is. I realize that that may be a Midwestern attitude long since disappeared from the face of the earth, but it was in the late 60s and early 70s that guys with degrees in business and some technical background wanted to be vice president the day they joined the company. That was not the attitude of the people of my generation. You know, we expected to work at whatever we did and did well, and the future would take care of itself. I never had a specific goal of becoming anything other than perhaps the next level or maybe a level beyond that, but I just didn't think that way. And I was always pleased when the opportunities presented themselves, but I think my earlier words are right. I was comfortable in research. I was comfortable in manufacturing. I knew I could run those operations at any level if the opportunity presented itself. But I also worked with a lot of people that I respected very, very much. And when somebody else got the nod, as they did from time to time, that didn't upset me. You know, I didn't want to take my ball and go home. I said, those are good people. Why shouldn't they? So that was my attitude in the whole process, and I never really had difficulty dealing with somebody else getting the selection at some point in time along the way, because I knew these people and they were good. Why shouldn't they?
In 65, you went to be assistant general manager of the film department and then over to plastics in 67. So now you're moving
I'm
into
a generalist. Whatever that is.
I was going to ask what that meant to you.
Well, it means that you've got to stop thinking just in terms of one discipline or another, but think about the business. And by then, I was quite prepared for that. I had attended enough marketing sessions because of my research responsibilities so that I was comfortable with marketing people, genuinely liked them, and liked the interaction with customers. I had a little bit of experience with that. Learned a lot about that interface and what's good about it and what can be bad about it. I'm laughing because there was one problem we had in cellophane with a customer. It was having difficulty with moisture protection. And we had sent him several test samples. And we didn't seem to be making any progress. And we knew they were different. So finally, this was clear back in the cellophane days, but the plant manager and I went down to the plant and talked with this customer and and really in depth about how they were handling the test samples, et cetera. He finally got hold of the guy that ran the test, and he said, well, when you get a new role, what do? Take this whole right through the process. He says, well, I go get that role that we've gotten originally, and I retest it. And none of us could believe what he just said. But he meant it. He was not testing the new material. He was testing material, retesting material, which he'd had all along. Well, that that's an absolutely absurd thing to have happen. But that sent a very strong message to me. You know, when you're dealing with customers, you really need to know exactly what they're thinking and saying. Because what you're hearing may not be what you think you're hearing. And, well, that's a kind of a corny little example, but there were a number of such situations along the way, and I became to appreciate the fact that suppliers and customers have a very special relationship and a very unique opportunity, which they can either screw up or they can work together in such a way they really help one another. And so I developed my own view about marketing and what's important in it. And obviously, that's just a little piece of it, but eventually I became fairly comfortable with that aspect of the business, and then I really didn't care what I did.
Well, you later on, you made it very clear to the rest of the people in the company what the customer relationship should be.
Yes, I did.
And the fact that at one point DuPont had the products and said, here they are, and then you turned that attitude around. Were you thinking, was that already developing at this point?
Yes, it became. It was coming along. In the 70s, it was clear that DuPont had to make some dramatic changes, and I would say during those years when Herb and later when Jeff were chairman, I had some pretty strong feelings about how we interface with customers and what was wrong with that relationship. And with the complete support from both Herb and Jeff, you know, I pursued my own agenda in that area, and I think it was helpful.
When you were in the film department and then in plastics, who were you reporting to?
In the film department, I reported to Norm and up the upper levels now. And Norm Copeland, who eventually became a senior vice president, and then to Walt Simon, who was head of the department. When I moved over into plastics, I was an assistant manager of the department, and I reported to Roy Schuyler. All of these people are wonderful people and very, very different and great teachers and great doers, too. Especially, well, Schuyler is a special case. He was a very interesting guy to be with, and very effective, and very much a doer. Norm is a little more laid back, but very, very proficient with people and with technology. Walt was a little bit on the philosophical side, but also very thoughtful, and you could learn a lot just listening to him and talk about what the business ought to be. And so each was contributed importantly to my view of the business, but in quite different ways.
I'm quoting now. I don't have the source here, but I could get it if you wanted it. When you were in plastics, it said, as number two man, General Electric took away DuPont's leadership in the profitable and growing automobile plastics business. The setback instilled in Heckert a keener appreciation of marketing, but it did not seem to hinder his career.
I wasn't there long enough to take responsibility for that. Yeah, it bothered us, and there were a lot of lessons in that period that I remember very clearly. One is that, you know, the worst thing in the world you can do is be defensive about mature products or maturing products. If something new is coming along and it clearly has a place, you better decide either how you're going to deal with it or how you're going to exploit it, one or the other. It is coming. And I think that was really the message that DuPont had a strong position in fluorocarbons and in polyamides and pretty good one in polyesters. No position in some of the other basics that were clearly going to be important, and elected not to take a position. And we suffered the consequences.
Was that an executive committee decision at that point? Was it made at lower levels?
Pretty hard to pinpoint. There was a strong underlying feeling in the company that we didn't belong in commodity businesses. Problem with that is that most businesses become commodities, and if you think you can invent fast enough so you'll never have to live that way, that's fine. But as the world became more and more competitive, which it did, international competition became a daily fact of life. As more and more companies developed the same recipe we did, with strong research programs and good marketing efforts and strong manufacturing, we were in another world. This was quite a change, external change, that we could not ignore. And one of the simple results of that is that commodities may be commodities, but if they're going to be damn important, and if they're going to make money, you better not thumb your nose at them. You better figure out how to be a player, and be a player on your earnings terms. Make some money at it, but be a player. So we let some things go that probably should have gotten into. Some of the decisions we made were probably right. Polyethylene is one of the greatest things that ever came down the road and never made anybody any real money. So, you know, there are different ways of looking at the same problem, and you do have to be selective. You can't do it all. We missed a couple, but we probably were right in a couple of other instances by staying out.